continuing to explore Dogen Zenji's Shobogen Zo's Wee Mon Ki, a record of things heard, informal talks of Dogen collected by his student. One of the main themes that seems to arise again and again in these evening talks of Dogen is the topic of aspiration. Aspiration for practice. And I think it's a kind of a tricky area. It's a little bit almost taboo, I think, sometimes to talk about aspiration in Zen, because we have such a strong emphasis on non-seeking and no gaining idea. So what can aspiration be if not such self-centered, deluded motivations? And also I think of this topic as arising these days as we're going to send out this survey questionnaire in this upcoming newsletter, asking the larger Sangha what they're interested in, what kind of practice they would like to do here. I feel like there's so much potential at Santa Cruz Zen Center. We could do so many things. And what do people want? And another way to frame this question would be like, what is people's practice aspiration? I think every practitioner, actually, whether they're conscious of it or not, has some aspiration and practice. It's what keeps them going. And so it could take many forms. And what is that? We didn't put that question on the survey. I think it might be a little too intimidating. What is your deepest practice aspiration? But I think the questions that we asked imply this larger question. So here's one story that Dogen brings up. And, you know, he likes to bring up very powerful kind of stories just to get us going a little bit. So when we're thinking about our practice aspirations, this might sound a little bit like, wow, I can't even imagine an aspiration like this. But here's a story that he brings up, and maybe we can find it encouraging in one way or another. I think I mentioned this story last week, but didn't tell the whole thing. Dogen says, there's a story about how Zen teacher Chikaku aroused bodhicitta and became a practitioner. In a way, arousing bodhicitta is very similar to aspiration, I think we could say. So it's how he aroused this aspiration to practice. He had been a government officer. He was a man of talent and righteousness. While he was a provincial governor, he appropriated official money unlawfully and gave it to the people. One of the officers around him reported this to the emperor. Upon hearing this, the emperor was astonished. All of his ministers also thought it strange, because he was a man of talent and righteousness, and is very out of character for this particular officer. Still, since the crime was not a minor one, the decision was made to put him to death. This is how it was in the old days in Japan. We can't just let these things go. The emperor said, "This officer is a man of talent and a wise man. He dared to commit this crime. He might have had some profound motivation. When his head is about to be cut off, if he looks regretful and full of grief, cut it off quickly. If not, undoubtedly he had a deeper motivation, so don't kill him." And of course he didn't tell this officer about this plan, so otherwise he might have tried to fake it. When the imperial envoy brought him out to cut off his head, he did not show regret or grief. Rather, he looked joyful. He said, "I give this life to all living beings." The imperial envoy, surprised and amazed, reported it to the emperor. And the emperor exclaimed, "It's exactly as I thought. He must have had some deeper reason." When the emperor asked the officer what his motivation was, he said, "I wanted to retire from government office, give my life away to all living beings, and form a connection with everyone, be born into the family of Buddha, and practice the Buddha way wholeheartedly." And so he started this project by illegally just giving away these government funds to people to help them. The emperor was moved by his reply and allowed him to become a monk. Therefore, he was given the name Enju, meaning prolonged life, since he had been saved from capital punishment. So Dogen tells this story and then says, "Practitioners today also have to arouse aspiration like this at least once." Which I thought was an interesting point too. At least once. Maybe for like a moment or something. To have this for a moment, just to let go of everything completely and just say, "I surrender totally. I give my life to all beings. Whatever happens is fine. If my life has to end, so be it. I just want to practice the way." Arousing such an aspiration, Dogen says, means thinking little of your own life, having deep compassion for all living beings, and entrusting your bodily life to the Buddha's teaching. If you have already aroused such aspiration, protect it. Do not lose it even for a moment. It is impossible to realize Buddha Dharma without arousing such aspiration. This character, Chinese character that Dogen uses for aspiration, is made up of the radical for earth or ground over heart or mind. So it seems like something like a very grounded heart. A heart that's like completely just resting on the earth, supported by the earth. A little bit like when the Buddha, on the night of his awakening, reached down and touched the earth. A grounded heart, a heart grounded in the reality of the way things are. Aspiration or intention or determination or resolve. So then later a student of Dogen asks, "Although many years have passed since first setting out to learn the way, I have not yet had any realization. Many of the ancient teachers said that the way does not depend on intelligence or wisdom or learning. Therefore, I don't think we should demean ourselves because of our inferior capacity. Is there something about this that's been handed down in the tradition which I should keep in mind?" And Dogen says, "You're right about not relying on intelligence, talent, quick-wittedness, or wisdom in learning the way. It doesn't depend on these things." In the Fukan Zazengi, Dogen says, it's not a matter of being dull or sharp-witted. If you concentrate your efforts single-mindedly, that in itself is wholeheartedly engaging the way. And I think this is good news. I think this immediately opens up the way of practice to everyone. It doesn't depend on anything that we've learned or our any kind of mental capacities or anything like that, they might wonder, well, what then does it depend on? Dobin says, since studying the way does not require having wide knowledge or highly talented abilities, you should not show disdain toward anyone because of lacking any of these capacities. True practice of the way must be easy. And then he says, and yet, very few people in China these days, in these giant monasteries, really realize the way and understand the Dharma. Therefore, there must be things handed down which we should keep in mind. So then, in the end, he says, I believe this. It depends only on whether one's aspiration is firmly determined or not. A person who arouses true aspiration and studies as hard as his capacity allows will not fail to attain the way. We have to be careful to concentrate on and directly carry out the following practice. First of all, just maintain the aspiration to earnestly seek the way. For example, a person who desires to steal a precious treasure, to win a battle over an enemy, or win over a beautiful woman or man of high nobility, will constantly seek an opportunity while carrying out whatever activities in whatever situation or occasion, though various things are changing, since one's mind is always occupied with this desire. If one's desire is that enthusiastic, one will not fail to fulfill it. In the same way, if the aspiration to seek the way is earnest enough, when you practice just sitting, studying koans or meeting the teacher, though your aim may be high, you will hit the mark. Though it's deep, you will fish it out. And then Dogen says, next, to arouse such an aspiration, think deeply in your heart of the impermanence of the world. And this is not a matter of using some provisional method of trying to figure this out. It's not a matter of fabricating it, something that doesn't really exist. Impermanence is truly the reality right in front of our eyes. We need not wait for some teaching from others, a proof from some passage of scripture or some principle. Born in the morning, dead in the evening. A person we saw yesterday is no longer here today. These are the facts we see with our eyes and hear with our ears. So arousing aspiration, and this comes from contemplating how everything is impermanent, particularly our life is impermanent, quickly passing. And then one might also ask, well, aspiration for the way, well, what is this way? Could we also hear that the way is originally perfect and all-pervading? It's here all the time. Our Buddha nature is inescapable. So this is where I think it gets personal. And we all might have different expressions and thoughts of, well, what is our actual aspiration in practice? Classically, bodhicitta is spoken of as, you know, the wish to fully manifest complete Buddhahood. And it's often, I think, thought about as something very different than where we're at right now. A grand goal that maybe take many, many lifetimes to complete. And that a fully realized Buddha would be infinitely compassionate and be able to have a complete skillful means to help all beings in any possible way. And that might sound very abstract to us. So I think to bring it right down to earth, where the earth meets the heart, but could also just say, sometimes when I think about it today, I can feel an aspiration to really be here, really actually embody my life, you know, in a moment-to-moment way. It's so easy to get caught up in things, in the busyness of a day, in unimportant matters. So when coming and going to the Zendo, for example, can I really just walk to the Zendo, walk from the Zendo without thinking about the next thing? And particularly in Zazen, even if it seems too much to remember throughout the day, Zazen, I could say, here's a chance to really be here. And I find the aspiration often arises in Zazen to, okay, this is a great opportunity in this impermanent, quickly passing life to really, as Dogen might even say here, you know, give this life completely to all beings in spirit, in period of Zazen. Give my life to this, the people in this room and those everywhere, with such an attitude. Let go of my narrow self-concerns. And as we know, this is challenging. So this aspiration could be very deep to actually carry out. I mean, it's unlikely that we would complete it in every single period of Zazen from beginning to end. We would be completely dropping off our limited body and mind like this. So it's endless. Even to, it sounds much less, you know, awesome and expansive as realizing complete Buddhahood, but yet isn't that an incredible challenge to just throughout our days to really just give ourselves to whatever we're doing at the time and watch the mind that's getting involved in the objects of the world and without withdrawing from the world, completely engaged, be present and relaxed and freely open to whatever is next. Not even whatever's next, but whatever's now. In the realm where there is no next. And now to remember the other side, because we can, as soon as we start going in that aspiration direction, it's very easy I find very easy to get on board with it and yes, I'm gonna do it. And if I don't do it, it's gonna be like, I'll be quite upset with myself if I can't do it. And it can, this very wonderful aspiration to give my life to all beings becomes this very actually kind of self-engrossed project of like, give my life to all beings, but like, get these beings out of the way while I'm doing it. You know, you're disturbing my concentration on giving myself to you. I think in some ways we can think this way, right? So Suzuki Roshi, I think, is a great master of... What's that?
He smooths that out.
Yeah, and brings up this, you know, this other side. He does talk about aspirations some, like there's this section called Single-Minded Way, and, you know, the Bodhisattva's way is the single-minded way, one railway track thousands of miles long. The railway track is always the same, and so... just, you know, nothing can stop us. Even if the sun were to rise from the west, the Bodhisattva has only one way. The Bodhisattva's way is in each moment to express his nature and his sincerity. Well, that sounds a little bit like arousing a very deep aspiration. And yet also, we hear, for example, mistakes in practice. Usually when you practice Zazen, you become very idealistic and you set up an ideal or goal which you strive to attain and fulfill. But as I have often said, this is absurd. When you're idealistic, you have some gaining idea within yourself. By the time you attain your ideal or goal, your gaining idea will create another ideal. So as long as your practice is based on a gaining idea and you practice Zazen in an idealistic way, you will have no time actually to attain your ideal. Moreover, you will be sacrificing the meat of your practice. Because your attainment is always ahead, you will always be sacrificing yourself now for some ideal in the future, and you end up with nothing. This is absurd. So he's pretty strong about this. So, is there a way to have this really wholehearted aspiration and almost like a direction? I think maybe even fair to say a goal. And yet, without getting caught in the result or the future, actually, you know, we're not thinking, we set up the goal, but then we're not dwelling in what it would be like if we reach the goal. Then we just practice, we just get on the 1,000-mile railway track and don't stop. And so, and Dogen himself, after he says, he talks about this way-seeking mind, seeking the way, then he also says, if you wish to practice the way of Buddhas and ancestors, you should practice the way of the previous ancestors and their conduct with no expectation of profit. Expect nothing, seek nothing, gain nothing. Which I find interesting because he's just talking about you need this aspiration to, he even says seek the way, and he even uses the same words. But actually, don't expect anything. I think this is the difference. Expect nothing, seek nothing, like with an expectation of the future goal, and actually gain nothing. Although you should quit seeking and give up expectations of Buddhahood, if you stop practicing and continue engaging in your former karmic deeds, you will still be guilty of seeking and will fall back into the old nest. So I think this is often when we hear about gaining idea so strongly, we maybe go to this back to this other extreme of like, well, I better not try to get anything, so then, but that's just another kind of seeking. Then we're just into like seeking whatever we were doing instead of practice and fall back into the old nest. So there's a middle way here, which as usual is a very subtle thing. The middle way of not falling into the extreme of seeking a goal with some expectation and being obsessed about the result, and avoiding the other extreme of not arousing the aspiration because we might get into a gaining idea, so let's just, you know, practice will happen on its own. Another way to put it too, about gaining idea, seems like it's more about the about myself. It's all wrapped up in like, am I going to get to this place that I want? Whereas this aspiration to seek the way seems like it's a larger context. It's we're practicing the way for the benefit of everyone, even if that doesn't make that much sense, or it doesn't. It seems kind of abstract sometimes. It's the spirit that we're actually are giving this life to benefit others. And I think we're all familiar with how there really is a connection there too, especially if we talk about practice is just, you know, meeting each moment more and more completely, and without getting caught up in our personal distractions. That's, I think, the main way we can really actually meet others and help others and be with others. And the main hindrance to that, it seems to me, is like when I'm really caught up in my own stuff. I mean, there could be somebody who just wants to be together, or just wants to, or needs some help in some way. And I'm saying, oh, you know, well, I don't even know this is a person over here. And we're just ready for the next moment. Living beings come to us. We meet them all day long, and we can really meet them more completely, it seems, when we're fully engaged in the present. Giving with the spirit of giving ourselves away. So is aspiration something that that you all have, think about sometimes? I think it's often, you know, it's easy to just go along with our routine. But, and our practice, we find a kind of a practice niche or something like that, right? Like a way where we just, we've worked it out and we're just going along and it works to some extent. And I know it's kind of like a plateau or something where it's somewhat comfortable and somewhat rewarding, and then we just go along like that. But it may be worth considering sometimes, like, what is, you know, my deeper aspiration? And again, if that seems abstract or like it doesn't seem to arise, Dogen Zenji beautifully gives this technique, you could say, for how to arouse such an aspiration. Just actually open to impermanence without even having to, like, you know, figure out or, you know, think about how are things really impermanent. He says it's in front of our eyes all the time. There's nothing, we don't need to be told about this, and our own lives quickly passing. And I think that shifts something when we remember how little of our lives we have left. How do we want to live them? Maybe at the very end, if we know we just have a few days left, our aspiration goes way up. We have nothing to lose, right? But now we might think, well, we might have something to lose. Yes, Patrick.
When I think of my first days here, years here, any aspiration that arose, or any effort that I put into, you know, my heart touching the ground, I think it was met with an equal energy. The practice, you know, touched that nature too. So it was this kind of equal and opposite.
Like call and response.
So it's more like the term accord comes up. Seem to be maybe acknowledgement or a realization of accord, and of course then it's all self perpetuating, or it's all self reinforcing. You know, you want to be there enough. being touched as well by the practice.
It's interesting because earlier today, thinking about this, you know, my own, how would I put my own aspiration, like today, that word actually came up for me too, accord. I thought of the aspiration to actually be in accord with everything. You know, even though, on the deeper level, we're always in accord with everything, but to actually join that accord is kind of like according with things. And it's another way of talking about giving ourselves to the present in a way that I think when we aspire to be in accord with things, we notice how things are in accord with us.
We've talked in here sometimes about how poetry can kind of touch that same deep place in us, or maybe music. And it's like we don't go out to find the perfect poem. I guess my metaphor is going to fall apart, but I guess sometimes you just open a book and, you know, you're touched, or you put the record on, the CD on, and you're touched by the music. And that's kind of the experience of coming here early on.
Yeah, sometimes just standing in the garden here, and without such a busy mind, I often feel touched by the beauty of the place and the garden, and I think that's part of our practice, is taking care of the place so that it does that in a way that's maybe more tangible than places that care hasn't gone into. So. And I think just the simple things, you know, I'm really, like this morning, I was just really appreciating sitting zazen quietly as the, you know, the sun had just come up, and starting the day with this great group of people, and what a precious gift, and yet how completely ordinary, and then we just go out and we have our little meeting and we go on our way, and it's very routine. I mean, for me, it's completely routine, and yet it's astounding. It's spectacular. It's completely amazing. Yes.
I think aspire. Sometimes I think of it like taking a breath. And how, you know, we don't get down on ourselves that taking a breath is gaining ideas. You know, and so why would it be gaining idea to breathe? You know, it's like the opposite of breathing out. And so, you know, breathing in, there's a kind of a filling and a rising and a filling that is, yeah, I want to do this thing. Mm-hmm. You know, and like I've been practicing lately with our Sunday evening group and just with Jean at home and, you know, conversations with people. Like telling people what I'm working on, you know, kind of in practice and what I'm struggling with, and then allowing for support from others, you know, even though I fail most of the time in what I aspire to, it doesn't stop me from continuing to do it. And I always appreciate the stories, you know, about the, you know, like the old man who just keeps coming to the lecture for 500 years, you know, and then one day he decides it's time. I love those stories because it's very, you know, I feel like I can relate to that, you know. So that, to me, that's part of aspiration is, you know, it's a goal. It is a goal. I mean, I would love to, you know, have my discursive mind, my judgmental mind settled down. And I want to let people know that I'm working with that. And so that's, you know, that's an aspiration. It's a taking. But the way you were talking about it, I mean, it's not about possessing, or, you know, you also then have to be willing for it not to happen and not to get too down on yourself or others about our
expectations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that the expectation, darn, I failed. No, you know, it's just take another breath, you know.
And comparing it to breath, I think is nice too, because it's such a natural thing, breathing. And I think that you know, maybe if we're not consciously thinking about it, it doesn't seem so natural. Well, I don't know if I have an aspiration, but I think when we're actually quiet and settled, naturally, I think we do have aspiration. We might not even think of it as practice aspiration, but it might be. It might be completely a practice aspiration, in the sense of there's something going beyond ourselves in some way, you know, which I think is a natural part of being human and having some kind of a self. There's a natural urge to go beyond itself. But it's sometimes we have to be very still to get in touch with that natural one. Like we have to be very still to get in touch with our breath, even though we're breathing all the time.
Yes. I will admit that early in my practice, I was accused, often scolded, I would even say, for having aspiration. And maybe because of my sort of relentless dog-like nature on the bone. Maybe that's what I was scolded for, I'm not sure. But you know, at that time, I wasn't ever asked actually what the aspiration was. It might have had the appearance of something and might have been completely something else. But what clarified it for me was years ago, Mel in Berkeley said that Suzuki Roshi taught him, just pick one thing and see it through to the end. And that has stayed with me as a very deep teaching. So these days, I aspire to that, just picking the one thing. And it's not going to be grand for me. It's going to be probably microscopic.
And there could be many different one things, and then you see it through the end, and then there's another one?
Possibly. Or all of those linked together. Become seeing something through. I'm not sure.
Yeah. That's a beautiful way to put aspiration. Just seeing anything through to the end.
But I wonder sometimes about the word aspiration itself. Has a sense of expansion or breathing or largeness, maybe. And I also think that we can, I don't know, what do you think? We can look at the tiny incremental
Elements
as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the word aspiration has a different feeling than seeking, for example, or striving. It can almost be like a selfless intention to move in a certain direction. And I think even if it's a grand aspiration, even if it's for, you know, complete Buddhahood after going through ascending the 10 bodhisattva stages over many lifetimes, and you know the way that it's spoken of in the sutras, it sounds incredibly grand project. But even then, it takes place in these tiny increments. It has to. I mean, that's our life is nothing but a bunch of tiny increments. So that's it. Like we could have a far-reaching direction to see something through that we might not ever actually see through, but we're taking small steps constantly. We have this 1,000-mile railroad track, but we're actually walking along it very slowly, which in this single-minded bodhisattva way, it seems like no problem. If we're just on that track and it's going straight and we can see that it just goes straight all the way to the horizon, we know where we're going. And it's not about getting there, it's more about like we're just walking on this track. What a great gift.
Yeah.
And if you don't know where you're going and you can't exactly see the track, you just meet each step as it arises.
In the darkness, yeah. Next step.
Foot contacts and then you step on that.
Mm-hmm.
Next, you know. So it can also have that sort of quality.
Yeah.
You're still walking confidently.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like the Bodhisattva of great compassion. Their activity is like reaching back for a pillow at night. Can't quite see what they're doing. They don't really know where they're going, actually, but that's their aspiration to help everyone in whatever way possible is this kind of like, I have no idea how to do it. So I think also that could be a quality of aspiration. We could have a strong aspiration to, you know, the Bodhisattva vows or something, right? Just help everyone in whatever way possible, or just be as completely present as possible. And yet we maybe have no idea how to fulfill it. I think not so important. And I think that's what Dogen says in these passages and others, is like, the main thing is like, you're just getting in touch with the aspiration rather than like trying to figure out how to practice. First you just get the aspiration going, and almost like the rest will take care of itself. It's like, that's like our fuel. The aspiration is the fuel to keep going. And then we do have to discern which way we're going to go, but if we're trying to discern which way we're going to go without the aspiration, we won't probably go either way. And I think, again, when we say practice, it can be very broad. That's why I think thinking about this survey again, it's like, well, we do call this a Zen center. So, you know, maybe, ideally, it would have something to do with some connection somehow to what people call Zen. But not even necessarily. You know, I think just, I would say something wholesome, intention, but it can manifest in so many ways. We have this space and we have this great sangha that, which is another thing about aspiration too, I feel, is we help each other without even trying, just by practicing together. I think that actually shifts. I know for me this is the case, and it shifts my aspiration to come and just sit with other people. It's very different than if I'm just off on my own. I still can get really into maybe different aspirations, but it gets more narrow. I think just to be, particularly if the aspiration is kind of connected with Zazen, then it's really amazing. And I have this great gift of being able to face outwards and see people. Just, I don't know what's going on in the minds. Maybe I don't want to know, but to see these, like, you know, upright bodies sitting there so still is like, it's deeply moving. It affects me. I think even if we can't see it, we feel that encouragement. Yes.
It seems like, related to your earlier point of how the tendency might be, I'm busy aspiring here.
Yeah.
But actually, it's more like, no, we really do need to do this together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's necessarily a part of the equation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In ways that are not even completely conceivable, I think. You know, it doesn't seem like, you know, theoretically. Like when I first got into practice, one of the reasons I was really drawn to Buddhist practice was I'm a very independent type, and I thought, this is so great. Here's like this thing that you can do completely alone. That was one of the things I liked about it. Like, I don't need any help with this at all. I can just, and you just have like your cushion and you just go do this. And
how long did it take for
you? a little while. Sometime within a year, maybe. Well, I did sit a lot on my own, and at some point I was going to school and finding little closets and tops of staircases and empty classrooms to sit on my own in. And at some point I thought, I want to see what it's like to do this with other people. And I think it was somewhat difficult to it was a little bit of an affront to my independent mind to actually feel like, oh, actually, I think this is helpful to be around other people doing this. In all kinds of, again, all kinds of, not so much that, like, they're going to teach me something, or they're going to, like, you know, I'm going to run out of the room if there's nobody else here. I think it's much more intangible than these kind of, I mean, it might be those things too, but it's something about getting like-minded people together with similar aspirations, even if we don't talk about what they are. And then seeing how that resonates. So I invite everyone to contemplate without getting too heavy duty about it, just to think about, you know, what are your aspirations for practice? I mean, we have aspirations in all kinds of aspects of our lives, but something that we might call, Zen practice, spiritual practice, whatever draws us to a place like this. And if we're not so in touch with it, then just remember impermanence. We dedicate any merit arising from this discussion to the fulfillment of the wholesome aspirations of all beings. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.